All right, well, good afternoon, everybody. We'll get started. I understand that this session is the last one between information and lunch, so we'll try to make it a little appealing to you guys with cookies and
cheaters, right?
Those of you that were next door, I saw you guys come out with chocolates too, so. Well, first and foremost, thanks for coming to our session. I'd like to introduce Rick Nowak. He's the COO of New Wave Entertainment. And New Wave is an employee-owned entertainment parking host facility. They specialize in content creation and trailers, TV spots, social media management, and spot finishing. They employ 180 individuals, and they're based here in Burbank. And one of the biggest pieces of what we're going to be talking about today is around content security. And one of the statistics I wanted to bring up to everybody, for those of you who haven't seen it, is that just recently the Verizon Data Breach Report, which is an annual report released by Verizon Business, talked about security incidents in the year 2018. And one of the things that stuck out to me was that the second largest impacted industry was media, entertainment, and information companies. And that was behind public sector organizations such as, you know, state and regional governments. For those of you that have seen the news, Baltimore has been flagging a pretty big issue. But media and entertainment companies are the second largest impacted. And, you know, so what I'd like to talk today is really have more of a roundtable and have Rick share what the journey's been like around content security and some of the challenges that they faced and some of the opportunities that they've capitalized on. So first and foremost, thanks for coming and joining me today. So I know that New Wave has, you know, been, you know, one of the first ones to go through the MPAA content security assessment program, which was started originally by the Big Four audit firms. And I'd love to get your perspective and just general guidance on some of the challenges you guys had and some of the changes you've seen before that and then kind of going through that process.
Sure. First of all, good afternoon, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. But if you guys were, just before I answer that real briefly, if you guys were in here for the TPN thing a half hour ago, I'm going to be covering some of that same stuff, so just bear with me. But I got a little bit different perspective on it. So if they're in here, I'm looking out for them. So New Wave was one of the first original pilot programs for the MPA for their audit, for the first security audit. And I remember when we got the phone call, it was kind of it was a big deal because we had never had anybody kind of look at our security. And I think at the time, if we want to talk about like 18 years ago when we first did it, that, you know, what did your security consist of? Well, it consisted of a couple of cameras at the door, maybe we had some badges on people, and that was about it. And the big thing that we also noticed with that, though, is I think it was Deloitte that came in and did the first one. Now, as JT said, it's a Big Four company that is used to assessing big, large companies. And they came in and they had this big cross sheet of things that kind of really didn't matter to our business. It was almost like things that were along a banking business. And I remember that the entire time we kept talking to them, that doesn't relate to us, that doesn't relate to us. You need to understand our business, that doesn't relate to us. And then even when we got that first assessment, it was jarring. Because there were certain things that we didn't meet compliance. Well, you know what? We're not Fort Knox. We're not going to be Fort Knox. And so to have that assessment was difficult. Now, over time, that they refined it. Even though they kept using firms, they moved on to Pricewaterhouse. And they were getting better at assessing what our business was. Because for all of you guys in here, it's all different sizes. We heard that, you know, mom and pops, a business that maybe like us is about 180 people versus like a Deluxe, a Technicolor, things like that. Things that are very large in size. So you can't put us all in the same crate. There are certain things that we all have to assess and we have to adhere to. But to sit there and make us all into one shape fits all, that didn't work. And that's kind of been the hardest problem through all these years. And trying to get to that point where it's like, look, I'm this type, I'm this flavor, so let's assess me on that flavor, as opposed to trying to put me against the Lux or trying to put me against Fort Knox or whatever it may be. We all have to meet certain basic criteria. We all get that, we understand that. But overall, it's been a better process. Now, with the TPN coming in, I applaud the fact that they're trying to centralize it and that they're trying to look at different companies. So that's actually a positive step in the right direction. 18 years too late, but it's starting.
And so I know that the TPN is relatively new, but what is your kind of viewpoint around having more of a centralized framework to be assessed against versus, you know, maybe having four or five different studios in on an infrequent or frequent basis?
On paper, it makes total sense. In practicality right now, it's not happening. Those of you who've done a TPN assessment or whatever, that's fine, and you know, I think we should all start moving towards in that direction. It's not happening in practicality. At least the studios that I'm dealing with aren't requiring it, aren't making it part of the thing. So right now, a TPN assessment is exactly that. It's an assessment, and it works as a barometer for you to where your organization is right now, maybe what you need to do better, or whatever you're doing really well to begin with. Or, as we heard in the presentation, it's a good way to also find out in what devices are working and what's not working. It needs to happen. The problem also, though, is that until everyone really buys in and says, look, here's the deal. You've done a TPN assessment. We accept that. We move on. Right now, that's not happening. I just went through three assessments in the last 2 months from three different studios. No mention of TPN, nothing about TPN. So right now, the TPN would have worked for me in the sense of giving me an assessment of where I am so I know what to fix. But they also tell me that as well, too, from the various studios, because otherwise they won't give me content. They won't do certain things.
So, a little bit about the other studio assessments, not naming the studios, but were those assessments different per studio, or were they fairly the same?
I find them to be about 80% the same. They still are using the MPA best practices to formulate their questionnaire with. And I would say that's what I said, about 80 to 90% of the questionnaires are exactly the same type of questions. Some studios, for whatever reason, decide to take a question and word it ever so differently. Sometimes they just want a yes or no answer. Sometimes they want an explanation. And it's kind of all over the map. And it's very time consuming. I will say that the last assessment that I just had 2 weeks ago, there was no pre-questionnaire. We did it in the room. We did it live. I actually kind of prefer it. Now, granted, it was all afternoon, but it was there, and we could also talk in context. So these questions, I don't know if you guys have ever seen these things, some of them are just mind-boggling to go, well, it's a yes and a no. Well, I go put that in there, and I can make this long answer. Sometimes it's just a yes. Sometimes we've just taken the attitude of just answer yes, or just answer no, and then when they come over for the assessment, we'll go into detail with that. So if we can get into something, again, that's a little bit more centralized, a little bit more of a process that makes it more uniform, that people understand, when you answer that question, it meets that criteria, fantastic, that's great. It's just not there.
So you talked about around the time and the soft costs, and we even heard the TPN folks talk about that. How do you feel that the cost structure with the TPN assessment versus the current model where the studios come in and pay for it, how does that look from a business perspective for New Wave?
Well, I'll tell you that, you know, we had heard rumblings of a centralized, you know, system for a while. And the first thing that we were told was, oh yeah, this is something you're going to pay for. I'm like, and from what I've heard, if anybody can correct me if I'm wrong, that an MPAA assessment through the Big Four was $15,000 a facility. And I'm thinking, well, great, now I get to spend all this money in infrastructure, and then I get to also now pay for my assessment. Obviously, as we heard and what other information we've also gathered, it's not as expensive. So, and I think it does anybody a service to obviously have some sort of consultancy anyways. I'm not going to lie, this is my security consultant. So it doesn't hurt to obviously have that cost since it's cheaper. The thing, the only downside about it is until it's fully operational, then it's money well spent. So right now, you're just kind of, you know, spending to just be okay.
So, with some of the spending outside the assessment pieces, obviously a lot has changed over the last 12 to 18 months. And it'd be great if you could share a little bit about some of the investments you guys have made, some of the challenges that you've seen in transforming your organization.
Sure. Since that original MPA audit, I would say when we first did our audit that the majority of the questions, majority of our security was much more physical based. Those of you who remember videotape, you can raise your hands. because we were still slinging tape. We still had tape machines. We still had a big vault that had 1,000 tapes. We still had clients that were sending us clean features on videotape. I can tell you today that I have not seen a videotape in 5 years, maybe longer, of anything with audit, unless we got to go back into the vault for something and then somebody can do it, because the kids don't recognize that. So it was definitely much more physical. It was about your cameras. It was about how you got around the building, and almost in that prevention of keeping your content in the building from the people in the building. And that is transformed completely, 180, to a complete digital. Now, granted, yes, it's obvious to sit there and say digital because we're all working with digital mediums now. But what I mean by it is it goes beyond just your content. It's going to your financial infrastructure, your HR infrastructure, things of that nature. So when I talk security, I'm talking about the global security. We can talk about content, but I'm talking about the whole thing, because any breach is a breach, and you don't want that. So that's the whole thing. So investment, yes, we've been investing more heavily in our digital infrastructure. Now, that's not to say that I'm not replacing cameras, which we are doing, and I'm replacing our DVRs, and maybe new key card readers and things of that nature. But it has all been about, our investment has all been about firewall, machine detection, whether or not a machine through Red Canary, Carbon Black, Fortinet, FortiGate, all those things that we've been getting to sign up for and to start implementing, because that's where it is at. And it's, again, like I said, I cannot stress enough how much it is global and not just your content. Your content's important, and it is two different things, but I'm looking at it from a big, massive whole perspective as opposed to just that. So yes, we've done some serious investment, and also we are, the biggest investment we're making right now is in network configuration, and trying to change our content network configuration to meet new demands.
So when you think about all those kind of controls that you put in place, and then you think about the workflows and how individuals work, and more and more we see people being more distributed, and even just in your office space, I'm sure it mirrors a lot of other office spaces of kind of the way creatives like to work, right? In teams, and they like to be able to move around the office space. How has implementing some of these controls impacted them?
Well, your HR and your accounting people, they have no problem. It's the creatives. I don't know how many of you guys have to deal with creatives, but we have over 50 edit bays at New Wave, and we have roughly 11 or so audio bays, plus all our supervisors that are handling that content to move that around. It is extremely difficult, because I think we all know that there is a difference between securing your content and securing it in a clean room, Fort Knox-y way, and also what a creative wants, and also on top of that, what your client wants. Because the biggest problem that I have found also is that our creative clients do not talk to their content security people, nor do they care, except for unless when you get in trouble. You get in trouble, then it's your fault. But I can't tell you how many times that I've had a creative who said, "I don't care, send it to me on my phone." And you're like, "That's against the rules, I don't care, send it to me now." Now, can I get an email that says, "Hey, am I off the hook if I send this to you?" No. So we are constantly skirting those two things all the time. So that is a constant. Plus, on top of that, no editor wants to wait for anything. No producer wants to wait for something to go through a scan or be downloaded. They want it in the systems. They want it now. They've got clients screaming at them. They want it now. So it's trying to find that compromise. And it's also working with the assessors to sit there and say, "Listen, man, we are in a creative environment that needs this stuff. Your people are not, they're not hesitant. They're not patient. These rules frustrate me." And that becomes a problem. And so it's a fine, delicate balance. Now, I will say this. People have gotten better over the years to get on board. When we first started doing this, I mentioned this to JT earlier, and if I get in trouble, I'm sorry, I apologize. I've worked in this business long enough to know when we used to get a feature, we'd get it on three-quarter tape and it was spoiled. And to get it in all the edit bays, you had to make copies. Well, the guy who's in charge of making copies would say, "Hey, run off three VHSs for us." And we, some of us would take them home and we'd watch them and we'd like, "Oh, this is great." well, obviously, that's against the rules, and that's, you know, you can't do that. But at the time, nobody really cared. But that was the mode that people were just nonchalant about. They're very casual about it. Well, obviously, that's changed. And with that, the attitudes have changed. So my editors and my creatives, they do understand better. There are certain times they go, can we do this? And I'm like, no, you're not going to do that. And they get it. They understand. I said, sorry, you're going to tell your client to apologize. And then we have to find out otherwise. Sometimes they do stuff behind our backs, and then we get mad about that too. So they have gotten better. They understand that everything is in jeopardy here because nobody wants to be the one responsible for a breach because they know the consequences of that, which is great. Because I do remember way back in the day, something got out from a vendor with their spoiled things all over it. They're still in business today, so it didn't put them out of business. Today, it might.
It's kind of funny. You mentioned something around just the basic play, right? And the speed of business is accelerating. And how do you feel when you start looking at the frameworks and how those workflows don't really take into account the interoperability of using things like the internet to share content and things of that nature? What are some concepts and things that you guys have applied in a new way on how you address that with the external entities that you're sharing content with?
Sure. Well, the thing is that what we found is that there's new jobs being created, and because we're on security, the idea of having people whose sole job is basically I/O, and is basically getting content, moving content, and that they're the only ones who have the access to receive it, and then get it off of the internet, because I'm assuming like a lot of you guys, we're getting everything via links. We're not even getting solid drives anymore, so everything's coming via links, so hence the internet. And then that has to be downloaded. And obviously, you need something that's connected to something. And usually, it's being downloaded probably onto an external drive that then we can unplug and we can take into our clean environment, and we can then put that in. So that's created a whole different area of work, where, you know, be it a data wrangler, be it somebody doing those lines. That's their sole job, is to move this from point A to point B. And especially on the back end, the deliveries, especially in our finishing group, are so massive that yes, we have people that their sole job is just to move files. That's pretty much all they do.
So aside from, you know, giving them eyedrops and watching the file copies take place, if you had to redo it all over again, knowing what you know now, what are some of the things that you might have done a little bit differently, just from a lessons learned perspective?
I would probably have started investing in digital a lot sooner. Because the problem is that you find out almost sometimes too late on certain things. It's really easy to pivot, but it's going to cost you a lot. Mm-hmm. And if you realized, I mean, listen, I mean, like I said, when we first started, I mean, we were still slinging tape. And we always kept hearing that files were coming, digital files were coming. But in the meantime, I'm getting inundated with tapes. So it's really hard to build a digital infrastructure when you weren't doing it. And then kind of almost overnight, there it is, it's a digital infrastructure. So yeah, if there's one thing I had to do over, I would have started investing in that digital infrastructure a lot sooner. You know, because, you know, every now and then, every time when you guys, on the news, when you hear about a hack of some sort, and you hear about a facility that got hacked, I immediately go running to my IT guys, and I go, tell me that can't happen. And you sometimes get some sideways looks, and you get some big eyes, and you get some half answers, and you go, you know, then you start screaming at them, that better not happen to us. I can't prevent user error. One of the things that I know that we're all combating is phishing emails. I get at least 15 a day, if not more, and it is inevitable that somebody in your organization is going to click on a phishing email. It just is. So the question then becomes, how do you prevent that? How do you, I mean, we can educate as much as we want, we can do all that. So I've been doing a lot of education on it, but I've also been preventing that anomaly from happening. Meaning is, okay, fine, somebody clicks on it, how do we cut it off at the knees? How do we stop it right there so it doesn't get into the system? And the next thing you know, something's out because someone clicked on an email because they got a free Amazon.
And it's actually kind of funny you say that. So actually, just as we're getting ready to walk into the session, I literally got a phishing text message around, hey, you need to revalidate your credentials for one of the different data sharing sites we utilize within the firm. And I laughed, and I'm like, well, hey, I know for a fact I wouldn't have to have redone this, but now I know my cell phone's out there, and they're targeting Uber, right? And I think it's an excellent point to bring up, and while this didn't happen with you guys, we had another client, I'll share a war story here in between, that similar situation happened where they had a creative get a phishing email. And the creative, on the initial uptick, said, well, this seems kind of wrong, and responded, said, hey, I need more information, let's confirm this. And what happened was the attacker changed the medium. Right? They used their signature line that had their cell phone in it and started texting the person. And that threw their whole demeanor off, right? So we're training a lot around phishing emails, but the reality is that the bad guys are also changing their and adapting their tactics to use other channels to make you feel more comfortable. So it's definitely something to be aware of making sure that the individuals in your environment only have exactly what they need so that if something does happen.
Yeah. Also, going back a step, when you asked me if there's something I could do over, I wouldn't necessarily say I would do this over, but the other thing that I'm also realizing is, now granted, I'm an organization of 180 people, and that can fluctuate based on various things, but we'll stick with 180 right now. And the one thing that I'm finding, which is that if you are a company of our size or smaller, your investment in security is only going to go up, and it has to go up. And that's the one thing that is really, I wouldn't say throw me for a loop, but it's something that I really, in your budgeting every year, if you're not budgeting enough for it right now, then you're behind. And that's the one thing that if I can leave anybody with one big takeaway, which is, you've got to start assessing your security needs. And the fact that that this right here has become a huge part of my job. When I first got this job at New Wave 11 years ago, it's like, oh, we got an audit? Okay, I'll deal with that for 2 days and I'm done. And I had other people who would deal with that. I deal with this easily 50% of my time. This is like a big part of my job. And if you don't have somebody that is that, like in my IT group, I'm seriously thinking about taking one of my guys and saying, your job is security full time, nothing but, so you do not get interrupted with anything else. I only have 6 IT guys in my place. And those of you who only have 1 or 2, find some room in the budget, charge your clients more, whatever. You know what I mean? You're going to have to find a way to do this because it's 24/7. I don't mean 24/7 keeping you awake and like, oh my God, I'm worried and stuff like that. I just mean that this is constant. Until the TPN takes off and I can do one assessment a year, I'm more prepared to do 6 or 7 a year still for the foreseeable future. And that takes time. And that takes time for your people, and that takes time for yourselves if that's what your area is. And that's something that is not going away. As JT mentioned, look, we're getting attacked every day, whatever it is. Mostly people, all they're doing is they're looking for a financial record, they're looking for something. And then they might find your content, they might find something. And the next thing you know, you're out of business, and that's what you don't want. So as much as it sucks to hear that we have to make this large investment, because before, what was it? Like I said, cameras, make sure you have a lock on the door. That was it. And what I've spent over the 20 years is quadrupled than what we spent. So I think with that, yes, questions. Yes, I was going
to
say
last
questions.
5 minutes, we wanted to open it up for questions.
Thank you. By the way, you mentioned something earlier about your assessments being done individually by studios.
Yes.
As a vendor, is there anything that the studios can do more of from your perspective? Because I don't think we have a conversation enough about, we always have expectations, but I'm sure there are things that we don't take into account in our set. So is there something that studios could do to help you or better understand the process?
Yes, very good question. The first thing is that I was, like I said earlier, which is assess us on the type of facility that we are. I know they tend to assess on the type of content you have, and that's fine. But sometimes you get this question of do you have an X5Z matrix 1 2 3 XYZ, and you're like, okay, no, I'm not spending $100,000 on that. That's not going to happen. Let's be realistic. And then they go, oh, okay, but then you get your assessment and there's that little yellow mark instead of a red mark, and you go, okay, look at my, take me into consideration of what we're doing. So put me in a category of like kind of businesses to sit there and say, this meets the criteria for this type of business and what they're doing and things like that, as opposed to some trans-global, you know, thing that I'm throwing things between India and the UK and all stuff, because I'm not doing that. We have it in-house. So that's one thing I always wish they could do about. Now, I've heard that they're, at least the last assessment I had, they talked about it. The second thing is, if I didn't mention this, we're all doing more and more work on the internet. As the internet is a tool that you are working with, and to sit there and basically say, I can't work on the internet, I have to have it over here, and I have to have it separate, and all my workstations, like I said, I call them clean rooms. Like, I can't afford to build clean rooms. I can't afford to do all this. I can't afford to have 20,000 I.O. people that basically does their job is just moving this stuff around. So that becomes a large. So I wish that was something that could be definitely looked at a little bit. Meaning is, and from what I've heard, that is coming. Meaning is in the idea of the internet as a tool that is there. Now, granted, not there yet, but it's coming. Yes.
Yeah, I'm on the CDSA, and that's a very big discussion that we have a lot, especially with the advent of 5G, mm-hmm. air gapping doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
So we have to remove that from requirements and create something else. One, all our tools are moving to the cloud, so
right.
if your tool isn't there, you
right.
know, but on top of it, with a 5G phone, there is no such thing, and you need to have eyes on all of those transactions, not
ones. Right, no, 100%. And that was the other thing that came out of our last assessment, too, which was we were told that using the cloud was going to, well, at least what we were told is that AWS, Google, and there was one other, I can't remember, but exactly. And that, yes, we could start, and that kind of blew my mind, because I didn't get any email for that. No one had told me that we could. No one from we work with in the outside or whatever said, oh yeah, by the way, we're using the cloud, this is how we're using it. So-and-so came in the other day and they said, that's all good. So I didn't get that. When they told me that, mind blown. Now, how we're going to use it, I don't know. I have to ask my guys, though they're a little busy at the moment. I said, we need to start figuring out how we can use the cloud in our work, because it's there. And there's no reason why we can't use it. Our first thing is probably going to be in backups. Project backups, things of that nature, things that we can get off of our immediate production network, to kind of sit there on the side when we need it and bring it back or whatever. So that's probably where we're going to go with it first. But yeah, we're excited about it, by the way. And like I said, the second acknowledgement was, hey, yes, we understand that you need to work on the internet. We get it. Yes.
Curious if going digital has saved you money in some ways, right? You don't need a $100,000 HD cam deck anymore.
Right.
You don't need couriers to move things around. Has that, is it equal or not, the cost savings versus the extra savings now of all the digital content security costs?
You also forgot the tape costs too. HD cam and the cost of HD cam tapes. You're right, because you know we used to have more than a couple of very high-priced decks. That's a good question. I can't sit there and tell you I've done that assessment, but I would say that I'm still spending more on security because it's. I didn't buy a new machine every year. How about that? You know, usually I would buy one or two or whatever. You know, put them on a payment plan, and there you go. I'm not doing the same thing on security. So I would say I'm spending more every year. And I'm spending, since I'm not doing payment plans on a lot of that stuff, it's more immediate. That would be the big difference.
Just curious, because you said that the studios aren't accepting the TPM assessment, they're doing a lot of, 80% of it is the same. Are you having a discussion saying, here's our TPM assessment, can't you just ask those 20% of questions that aren't covered and kind of tailor what you're doing to meet your need rather than repeating it? And what's going on there?
Good question. I will freely admit, I have not done a TPM assessment. And the reason I have not done a TPM, no, that's fine. The reason I have not done a TPM assessment yet is the program was just introduced last year. And I know the first 6 months it was in a beta. And they said, hey, you might be on contact for a beta. I was like, okay, more contact. And then it's been kind of in full effect for the last year. But again, it's one of those things that I'm waiting for the dust to fall out, right? I was waiting, as a, I wasn't running to the TPA and saying, please come through my building right now. I had other assessments already lined up already. To throw the TPA at that moment would have been, you know, would have just clogged up the works. So, and then on top of that, through Richie Mates and some others, I've been asking plenty of questions about the TPN, about the assessment, about what it is, what kind of, what are we going to go through, what are we going to be prepared for? And then, like I said, on top of that, in my discussions with these, with the auditors that have been coming over, I go, what about the TPN? They said, well, that's good. I mean, we're not there. Their assessment is, we're not there yet to just blindly accept it and say, okay, you're done. And I've also, some of the streamers and some of the other things, they haven't just said, yes, get a TPN assessment and you're good. Now, they ask the question, because every question I get in an assessment is, when was your last assessment and what was it? And then I list every studio, I list the MPA, I list all the years, I list all of that stuff. Now, TPN will be part of it, but, you know, I will say that the only time I've gotten out of an audit is when I said, oh yeah, we just finished the Disney Marvel audit. And they go, oh, well then we're good. Now, that's the idea though, right? That's the idea of the TPN. Hopefully, willing, God willing, that's the idea. I'm not saying they're not accepting that TPN, that's just too strong of a word, it's just that they're not signing off on it yet. That's really what we'll find. It's not that end all be all that they are preaching. I hope it is. It'd make my life a lot easier. Have them come in every February and go, here you go. I'm done for 2 years, great. You know, and you know, keep the dialogue going as things change, sure, you know what I mean? You would hope that it gets into a shorthand, that then we can make these things easier, and then people comes up. I would love nothing more. But I don't know when that's going to be. And at least in my last assessment, again, remaining nameless, they're just like, yeah, you know, they've got their thing, they're doing it, but we are doing it this way, and this is how we want to do it. So it's like, okay, that means I'm not getting out of 6 assessments a year.
Yeah, and we see that with other clients as well that have been TPN, where the studios, they still like their own little flavor, right? It's great that you've got chocolate and vanilla, but we like strawberry too, right? And that's really what we're still seeing, is the industry as a whole has identified behind, you know, one central framework. So not to say that it's not helpful for preparing you and making it more repeatable, I think, which is kind of where you're getting at. The challenge is that those specific studios still come in to their vendors and say, hey, that's great, but you know, you've got chocolate and vanilla, but we want a little bit of strawberry swirl in there too. And they ask it just their little way, and they want some things, you know, in a little bit different manner. And that's just kind of challenging.
Again, from the CSA TPN point of
view. That's all good. Please, please.
One thing that I would say is an advantage to participating in the TPN at this early stage. There are two reasons I would recommend doing it. One is because the more of you that do, the sooner it will get the traction that it needs. But also, for the non-studio producers, you have a marketing tool. You've got an audit. What is there for them to see is up to you. But you have something that you can share with the people who aren't the studios. And that's most of them, in fact. So it is something that I would recommend participating in for those two reasons. Forgetting about the big guns.
Sure.
There are all those others out there that can use it, and you can use it as a marketing tool for them.
In closing, because they're all looking at us now, I will tell you, we fully intend to get TPN rated. I mean, that is, I don't want anyone walking in there going, oh, he's not saying it. Forget that, I'm not doing it. No, we plan to do it. We definitely plan to do it. And I'm not waiting for someone to tell me to do it. We are going to do it within 6 months, hopefully. That's it. Any more questions? Come on in. Thanks.
Thank you.